The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Gary Parrish, welcome back. CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. The Ion College Basketball Podcast is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. FanDuel Sportsbook, make every moment more. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button. Brandon Davies, you have consent. Don't forget, while you're here, to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel if you haven't already done that. Let's get into it. I want to start by congratulating some programs that have secured conference championships since we last talked. UConn in the Big East, Tennessee in the SEC, Utah State in the Mountain West, Richmond in the A-10, Arizona in the Pac-12, just to name. We will get to Arizona in a bit, but before that, I want to discuss Houston, which can secure an outright Big 12 title this weekend with a victory over Kansas. They are already co-champs at worst. After UConn won at Marquette earlier in the week, a bunch of us who happen to be talking on TV or anywhere else people talk made the case once again that, I tell you what, if I had to submit a ballot for National Coach of the Year right now, I'd give it to Dan Hurley. But on Twitter, Deadleg, you got my attention because you made a counter argument for Kelvin Sampson. And I have to say, after I read your counter argument, I went, you know what? That's pretty good. That's pretty good counter argument.
Yeah, well, that's the poll as we start this Friday morning podcast. Thank you to everyone for joining us live here. Great to have you with you. Love a Friday show. Ready to roll. I don't know if I had to log a ballot today, and we do not have to do that for like another, I don't know, like 24 days for CBS, which is good. I appreciate that. I think I would give it to Kelvin Sampson. Now, Dan Hurley is in this discussion. I think it's actually one of the more compelling National Coach of the Year seasons we've had in a while. Danny Sprinkle at Utah State has a very good case because Utah State's trying to win its first outright league title in 13 seasons, and Sprinkle didn't return a single minute from last season's team after just getting that job. So he's up there. When you look at what South Carolina was a season ago and what Lamont Paris has been able to do to turn around, I think that's notable. TJ Otzelberger and what he's done in the Big 12. Amir Abdur-Rahim, look at what South Florida was forever. And even Hubert Davis, after all the disappointment, I think those are some of the names that are in the mix here. And don't worry, like there's a couple more, but those are near the top. I think I would go Kelvin Sampson because, and I'll be a little more specific if people didn't see what I sent out on Wednesday night, because Seth Davis, hi Seth, loyal pod listener, we always appreciate that and frequently get text message communication from Seth as he's working out listening to the pod. So I look forward to that. And I don't know, 4 hours or so. He had put out there that he didn't think there was really much of any case against Dan Hurley, when you look at what UConn has done, 27-3 record, the pressures of everything, everyone they lost. And there is a case for that, but, and this did get more attention than I thought it would, Houston has the same record, plays in a tougher league, objectively true, They jumped up a league, so the program actually elevated to a new status this season. In addition to just playing a tougher league, they actually had to make the jump. They also, like UConn, lost three critical starters. One of them was a first-team All-American, Marcus Sasser. Like, Jamal Shedd has been so good that maybe we've forgotten a little bit about how good Marcus Sasser was. He's just going to have back-to-back first-team All-American guards, man. That's incredible. There was a lottery pick, you know, Jairus Walker in there. Tremont Mark was a starting guard and a really good guard, and he transferred to Arkansas. So all that considered, on balance, Kelvin Sampson has just as good, if not a better, case for winning National Coach of the Year. And then I don't know if something like this should frankly be taken into account or not, but the program has also actually, you know, done this amid what was a tragedy afflicted offseason when Reggie Chaney, who just played there last season, tragically passed away. And so he wasn't going to be on the roster this season. But, you know, that's a guy that many people on this in this program knew and loved. And think about how, you know, stunning that is and how much that can impact a program, a locker room. And it hasn't. So to me, Kelvin Sampson has as strong of a case to win National Coach of the Year as anyone. Oh, by the way, the clincher right now for me is the fact that while I do think that UConn at its best is the best team, Houston has actually rated, and people are now in the past like week, Parrish, have like come around to like really talking about and acknowledging this, but I've been beating this drum forever, so it feels cliche for me to bring up again. Houston has rated as the best team in the sport since November. That's at KenPom, but multiple metrics since December, this has been the case. So you can say that Purdue has the best resume. It does. You can say that UConn plays like the best team at its best. It does. But on balance, the best team is actually the one Kelvin Sampson has been coaching. And so that's why he would have my narrow pick right now for National Coach of the Year.
Can't argue with any of it. I mean, when I say I would submit a ballot for Dan Hurley, I have never meant or even implied that. I mean, it's crazy if you're not also submitting a ballot for Dan Hurley, because you can totally reasonably submit one for Kelvin Sampson. And it's not just Kelvin and Dan at this point. You could reasonably submit a ballot for Matt Painter, for Danny Sprinkle, for Amir Abdur-Rahim, and every other guy that you mentioned. This thing is still not down to two guys, and it's still not down to it's still not settled the way the National Player of the Year conversation seems settled on Zach Edey, or at least it should be. On March 8, 2023, I guess I'd just put it this way. I would not have voted Dusty May National Coach of the Year, and I don't think you would have either. But given that we wait until after the Elite Eight at CBS Sports, what these people do in the NCAA tournament will play a role in at least who wins the CBS Sports National Coach of the Year award. But right now, I do think there's at least five guys that you could reasonably make a case for. And three of them are the men who are in charge of the programs that are ranked first, second, and third in the country right now. And oh, by the way, you could also make a case at this point for any of them to be ranked number one. I have Purdue, because I simply believe Purdue's got the best body of work. But just like you said, if you want it to be Houston, you can just point to the fact, and it is now a fact, Houston has more quadrant one wins than anybody in the country right now.
Ooh, I didn't realize that's the development. I didn't realize that was the case.
Okay. Houston is 12-3 in quadrant one. Purdue is now 11-3, and UConn is 10-3. Now, Purdue is 17-3 in the first two quadrants and still has more wins over top 25 net teams than anybody else. So Houston's only 15-3 in the first two quadrants. So like it just totally however you want to chop it up. You want it to be Purdue, just talk about record inside the first two quadrants and number of wins over top 25 net teams. If you want it to be Houston, talk about quadrant one record and number one in the net, number one KenPom. And if you want it to be UConn, just say, dude, I watch basketball and they beat the hell out of everybody all the time. Nobody beats people's brains in better or more convincingly or more routinely than UConn. That's the best team in the country. And I don't really think you can, I mean, we could all argue about it for hours if we wanted to, but I don't think we'd ever get anywhere. Those three are all very comparable and to each other and very different from everybody else.
Yeah, no, it's again, this is an awesome year for, you know, National Coach there. And then the extension of that is how many good stories we have at the at the top of the sport. I've enjoyed this season immensely, and I saw ESPN Stats and Info had a really good nugget on UConn. In the past 40 years, there have only been four programs that won a national championship and followed up the next season by winning at least 27 of its first 30 games. UConn's the fourth one to do it. It's 27-3. The other three were Georgetown in 84-85 was 28-2. Vegas in 90-91 was 30-0. Of course, famously was strutting there. And then Duke in 91-92, after it won the one in 91, the following season, it was also 28-2. The notable thing about all those programs, they all, after winning the national championship and having a hot run for the first 30 games of the season, all went to the Final Four that season. So that is a nice indicator for UConn, which went on the road. This was Wednesday night, of course, and won at Marquette, which didn't have Tyler Kolek, but they got another convincing win, another high-level quad one win on the road. I actually thought it was kind of interesting how Cam Spencer was ready to chat again, and then Dan Hurley kind of called him out in the huddle saying, that's enough. Like, you know, it's two times already tonight. I think he really likes to unleash Cam Spencer and knows that Cam Spencer burns on a certain kind of fuel. But that was a good catch by the TV cameras that saw that there. Hurley's done a masterful job, no question about it. And he might well end up being National Coach of the Year, and it would be well-deserved because UConn historically, and the Huskies fans watching and listening, I think they're generally aware of this. The year after they've won a national championship in the past, and you know, you get kind of used to it now, UConn fans, it's been 2.5 decades of this stuff. It has been unpredictable and a bit erratic in the follow-up seasons. And this has completely, and that's frankly part of why I didn't pick UConn in the preseason top 10. I was like, well, they lost all these guys, and this program historically, when like, you know, it has prosperity the next season, it can be hit and miss. And I thought, well, okay, you know, I'll still have them 13th, but Hurley has obviously, you know, done a wonderful job navigating through that all the way. So no, that was a nice win for UConn over Marquette, setting up this final game this weekend against Providence. We'll get to that later in the show.
Do you see Dan's post-game press conference where he's talking about the interaction with Cam? And he just said, I just didn't like it. You know, he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but this was a quote. I don't mind him shit talking some fan bases, but not this one.
Yeah, yeah.
I got too much respect for Marquette fans, which I like it when coaches compliment other fan bases and compliment other programs and can be complimentary. I never really, you know, whether it's Ohio State, Michigan, somebody's talking about the school up north, or it's Ole Miss and Mississippi State, and it's like the school down there, like these weird, like we're not even going to mention. I like it when somebody is so secure in themselves and what they're doing that they can say, oh, hey, by the way, this guy over here, who's, I guess, my conference rival, he's doing a hell of a job too, and he's really built something special here too, and I always enjoy being here. So I just loved every aspect of that. A couple more things, and then we'll move on. Mm-hmm. Back to Kelvin, you mentioned, and I do think this should be a part of the argument too, if you're arguing on behalf of Kelvin Sampson, going from what is right now the 10th best league in the country, according to the net rankings, the American, to the best league in the country, which is the Big 12. Because like I said earlier the week on Inside College Basketball, just because they've made this look easy doesn't mean that it is. This is historically a very tough thing to do. I just went and looked at Butler earlier just to make sure I remembered it correctly. And I kind of did. But Butler won the Horizon League in 2010 and 2011, went to back-to-back national championship games.
Yeah.
2 years later, moved to the A-10.
Let me guess. I'll say fifth.
Third. They finished higher than I thought. I remember it being worse than that.
Yeah.
But I also remembered it not like they didn't just go to the A-10 and win that the way they
did not, yeah.
Right. So they finished third in that year. That's the only year they were in the A-10.
Yeah. Well, that was facilitated by conference realignment, Catholic Seven, Big East being remade. And at that time, Brad Stevens is still there. And you want to talk about one coach, how we can change the whole trajectory of a program. That's it right there. But yeah, it's a 1 year way station situation for Butler. Now, obviously, it's been in the Big East for more than a decade.
Right. Brad did that for Butler. Greg Marshall, frankly, did that for Wichita State. That whole time of realignment was wild because for a minute, Butler was in the Atlantic 10. Mm-hmm. And most people don't remember this. Memphis was in the Big East. If you walked into the Memphis practice facility, they had Big East logos. There were Big East logos in the Memphis practice facility. And then they just said, no, we're not going to do football anymore. And then that was over. But that actually happened. So, Oh, okay. And then Butler moves to the Big East after 1 year in the A-10, finished ninth in the Big East in year one under Brandon Miller. So just because Houston has made this look like it's nothing, don't think that it's nothing. It's actually incredibly impressive. And another reason, if you want to make the case for Kelvin Sampson, that you got plenty of ammo to do that with. Also, I went and looked at the preseason AP poll today just to, because it felt like, man, I bet you this lines up pretty good with where we're at right now.
Like in terms of where the AP poll had teams in the preseason versus where they set the standings?
Yeah.
Let me guess real quick. I'm going to say Kansas was obviously one. Purdue was two. I think UConn was five. And then I went and looked. I didn't look at the preseason AP poll. I had Houston nine in the preseason. I'll say the Cougars were eight.
Houston was seventh in the preseason. So if you look at right now's AP poll, Houston's number one, seventh in the preseason. UConn number two, sixth in the preseason. Purdue number three, third in the preseason.
Oh, it was Tennessee. Third? Who was two? Purdue was two. Who was two? Who am I blanking on here? Duke. Duke was two. Duke was two.
Okay, here we go. Duke was two. Yeah. Then you go fourth in the AP poll right now, Tennessee. They were ninth in the preseason. Fifth in the AP poll right now, Arizona. 12th in the preseason. So the top five teams in the AP poll, after 4 months of basketball, the top five teams in the AP poll were all in the top 12 of the preseason poll 4 months ago. The big one, Iowa State, unranked in the preseason, sixth in the AP poll right now. North Carolina is seventh right now. Was 19th in the preseason. Marquette is eighth right now, fifth in the preseason. Duke is ninth right now, second in the preseason. Creighton is 10th right now, eighth in the preseason. It holds up pretty good.
It does. And the preseason AP top 25 obviously has some misses. I had a thing in the court report a couple weeks back where we're going to get teams that were in there. On average in the past like 11 seasons, I think it was 4.2 teams in the preseason top 25 wind up missing the NCAA tournament. We're going to hit that number again. I don't have time. I'm not going to waste our viewers' time looking that up here. But like USC is in there. There's plenty of others that are in there. I'm just blanking on it. But we're going to hit the over on that. It's going to be like four or five, potentially six preseason top 25 teams. But for the most part, this was accurate. Just switch out Michigan State with Iowa State. Michigan State was a miss relative to all of that. But Otzelberger, and he's gotten some votes here in the chat. These are the poll results, by the way. So right now, who would you have for National Coach of the Year? The options were Dan Hurley, Kelvin Sampson, or other. So you got the field. Dan Hurley is leading 42%, but other at 30%. Kelvin Sampson, 28%. That's a pretty healthy disparity. I've seen this to Otzelberger votes. Lamont Paris is mentioned in there as well. Iowa State was able to beat BYU on Wednesday night as well since we last chatted there. And that was a very impressive come-from-behind win. Did not look like Iowa State was going to win. They finished the season undefeated at home, which has been huge, and reinforced their bona fides as a two seed. And register among the bigger surprises at the very top of the sport right now.
Yeah, keep in mind, if Iowa State goes and wins at Kansas State this weekend and Kansas loses to Houston, that's okay. Then Iowa State would be co-Big 12 champs, and that would obviously enhance the case for TJ Otzelberger. A lot of good candidates. Race is not over. I'm sure we'll talk about it again, and then we'll submit ballots after we have a final four set. For now, let's move on. Arizona secured an outright Pac-12 title late Thursday by blowing out UCLA while Washington State was losing again. We'll talk Pac-12 next. First, a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Oh, Arizona secured an outright Pac-12 title late Thursday, blew out UCLA. Meantime, Washington State lost at home to Washington. Yuck. Dead leg. On Inside College Basketball earlier in the week, we played a game of this team or the field. It was like Houston or the field in the Big 12 tournament. And I said, I think Houston's the best team, but there's like 10 top 45 net teams in the Big 12. Give me the field. Then it was like San Diego State or the field in the Mountain West tournament. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, maybe San Diego State should be considered the favorite in some circles, but there's at least seven different teams I think can win that thing. So give me the field. Then we got to the Pac-12 and I was asked Arizona or the field in the Pac-12 tournament. And that's where I went, I think I'll take Arizona. What would you do?
Yeah, I think I'll take Zona if it's Zona or the field. Although, you know, as you say that, I watched, you know, Colorado got a win last night that I think puts it in the field for now. And I think Colorado, I can't call it like a dark horse. It's like the third most likely. If you're a top three projected team to win your conference tournament, I can't call you a dark horse. And Colorado's probably third in line behind Wazoo and Bear down there. So I guess give me Arizona, but there's something about Colorado, man. I don't know. I feel like they might have a genuine shot to do that. They've won five in a row. They got a big win. Utah did not, by the way, as we talk Pac-12 here. Utah went and fell on its butt at Oregon State. Utes are definitely not in the projected field right now. I would have the Buffs in intriguing resume overall. But yeah, Arizona, you know, not messing around and going down to UCLA. And, you know, I had the game on and I was watching here and there, but it was never compelling. It just, I was more dialed into the A-Sun, honestly, on Thursday night. And like, and the Missouri Valley, were you locked in with me? UIC SIU double OT after midnight Eastern on ESPN Plus. Were you dialed in, GP?
Buddy, if you think I was up after midnight plus after the week I've had, I was dead. I died 5 minutes after I got in my house.
Oh man, hell of a game. Congrats to the Flames for getting that win. Arizona has won 10 of 11 now at this point, going back to late January. The only loss was that Wazoo game 2 weeks ago when we hopped on the Friday morning pod and led on the Cougars. That was so Arizona, like Tommy Lloyd, they're still in the mix for a one seed. Clearly, like Tennessee, you can have them there for now, but Arizona, they're there. And Carolina, if it goes on the road and wins at Duke, and we're going to preview that in the final 4-1, they're still there. Like the fourth one seed is very much up for grabs. And good job by Arizona just to not make it remotely intriguing down in LA. It'll, of course, finish up Saturday at USC. Washington State, man. 23-8 now, 2-2 in his past four. After, you know, winning at Arizona, that's Saturday after a couple weeks back, it lost at Arizona State. It took care of business last weekend against the LA schools, but this was its final game of the season at home against Washington. And it's in the field. We'll see, you know, if it's going to be a 5, 6, or 7, depending on how it plays in the Pac-12 tournament. Kind of a womp womp, you know, you're having a good season and you can't pull out the home win over a rival. I had a coaching carousel thing in the court report this week. Expectations are that Mike Hopkins at Washington, this is, you know, pretty much it, barring a miracle run and all that. So good on him and that team to win a rivalry game. This was their final meeting as Pac-12 conference rivals, at least in the regular season. We'll see if the bracket allows them to wind up playing each other in Vegas. But I thought Washington State was going to come out hair on fire with something to prove and really going hot going into the Pac-12 tournament. That did not happen. Because of that, I do, you know, still a great story. And hey, maybe we look up and this team wins a couple of games and then the Sweet 16. And how freaking incredible would that be if it was Wazoo? But I do wonder now, is it going to be a story of a team that got in? Great stuff all the same. First time in 16 years you're dancing. But does it fail to get to the Pac-12 tournament? And is it wearing home whites in the first round, but then it's, you know, a victim of a double-digit seed upset? So keep that in mind there. I would take Arizona versus the field, but there's something about Colorado that I'm thinking that they definitely have the talent to go with Arizona and maybe give them a good push.
Yeah, I would take Arizona over the field in the Pac-12 tournament. Among other reasons, because, you know, Tommy Lloyd has quite literally never lost a Pac-12 tournament game.
Is that the case?
I believe that's the case.
That might be the case. I also think look it up real quick here. I think that's the case. Keep talking. I got another nugget for you. Keep going with your thought.
He's let's get the record exactly right. He is 1-2-3-0, and then 4-5. He's 6-0 in the Pac-12 tournament. 2 Pac-12 tournament titles in 2 years. How about this? How's this for a start of a career? We've been through this before, but Tommy Lloyd is now in the middle of year 3.
Yes,
he already has 2 outright Pac-12 titles.
Yes.
In the 1 year he didn't win it, he finished 2nd. He already has 2 Pac-12 tournament titles, and he can make it 3-for-3 next week in Las Vegas.
Not only that, he is now at 85 wins, and Arizona is going to get a chance to get to 86 over the weekend. Then 3 wins in the Pac-12 could be 87, 88, 89. So if Tommy Lloyd wins the remaining Pac-12 games on his slate, and wins 1 NCAA tournament game, or if he doesn't and he wins 2 NCAA tournament games, he will set the record for most wins to start a head coaching career in men's D1 history. Trivia time! I've talked about this on the pod. It's held by 2 people. I think you know it because I think this is becoming a more well-known stat.
Is it Brad Underwood?
Brad Underwood is one of them.
Yeah.
Yep. You're halfway there.
Yeah. And the other one is... Is it Brad Stevens too?
It is. It's 2 Brads. Brad Stevens and Brad Underwood both won 89 games in their first 3 seasons. They are the record holders. Tommy Lloyd's going to break that. I'm quite confident Arizona, one way or the other, is going to wind up getting him to 90, no matter how you slice it. So he'll be the new record holder in about, I don't know, 2 weeks or so.
And Washington State, it just looked like they were set up to at least get a share of the league title after they won at Arizona. And then they just gave it right back.
They did. And the surprising thing is the recent history with that. Washington had not won on the road against Well, how about this? UConn just did. I didn't mention that. Wednesday with the Marquette win.
Right.
First road win against a ranked team since 2014. 21 tries, right? Washington had done it in 2017. Like, think about what Washington's been. So it was Washington's first road win against an AP-ranked team since 2017 when Washington... I pride myself on remembering all the stuff in this sport over the years. It won at number 2 Kansas in 2017. I don't remember this game.
I do. I remember that result. I remember that result. I don't remember the game, but I do remember the result.
Kansas was 2nd in the country. So that was the last time until Thursday night that Washington had won on the road against an AP-ranked team. And it was a good night for Arizona. They hadn't won in Pauley since 2017 as well. And it is the 18th Pac-12 regular season championship in Arizona history. Quick tour around, just a couple other results here. I mentioned Colorado won, Utah lost. I said on HQ on Thursday, it was hard to believe that both those teams, they're right near the cut line. I just think one's going to wind up playing in and one's going to wind up playing out. It might well wind up being the Buffs instead of the Utes. Go back to Wednesday, Seton Hall, just bubble stuff. Seton Hall beat Nova. That was a big, convincing win that continues to have the Big East just eating up all those spots just around the cut line there. Butler beat Xavier to keep its case alive. Butler is not in the field right now. On Wednesday, Michigan State took care of Northwestern. I think that Michigan State actually locked up a bid with the win because now it's got one regular season game left and then the Big Ten tournament. I think if it were to lose its next 2, I think Sparty's in no matter what. So good on them. Northwestern, just don't lose out. But I've been maintaining for weeks and weeks you're going to get to the tournament, and I still believe that to be the case. So those were some bubble results. And then there was actually, real quick here, GP, off the court, a damn interesting story emanated on Thursday. UAB rolled Temple, and there's nothing to that in general, but Pat 40 from SI wound up writing about this, but credit to Jim Root of Three Man Weave, who identified this early in the day. The Temple, for the 2nd time this season, apparently has had unusually erratic betting action around its games. And so U.S. Integrity, which is a gambling watchdog company, it sent out an alert. This is per 40's reporting. It sent out an alert to casinos on Thursday about this, quote, unusual wagering activity, end quote, on UAB Temple. And because the line had gone from, I want to say 1.5 or 2, all the way up to 8. It came down to 7, 7.5. But you just never see, that's not normal. You never see those kinds of swings, particularly day of. If there's not, key note here, if there's not injury or other news.
But even then, just as somebody who watches this stuff, It doesn't move that much, even with an injury.
So, yeah. So, the you know, very, 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 very strange. So, you know, it's the game has been flagged. It's frankly why, you know, I think if you're an average fan, you're not really into, you know, gambling and betting, all that stuff. You're not aware of this. This stuff is tracked and has been by Vegas forever, because frankly, Vegas has no interest in getting beat and, you know, and someone rigging the game. So they have many, many, you know, nets and catch-alls to get this stuff. So it's been flagged. That's where the story stands as of now. It's been a good while here since college basketball has had a genuine game fixing or point shaving scandal. Not saying that's necessarily the case with Temple, but when this kind of thing happens, they are flagging it, they are investigating it, because the action on that game to inflate the line that much, it means, you know, somebody or some parties were so overly confident in UAB covering against Temple in a way that no other like metrics would have suggested, that they flagged it. And then we'll see where the story goes from there. But they, you know, that popped late on Thursday, and just wanted to inject it here into the pod.
That's
a weird one, man.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes. This was always going to be a part of the move of gambling into the mainstream. Like, we were going to get stories like this because it's never been easier for Americans to gamble on sports than it is right now. To your point about it all being tracked so closely, I don't want to sit here and say you have to be an idiot to think you can get away with something like this, because I assume somebody somewhere is getting away with stuff somewhere, but they're really on top of just about everything. Anytime you hear about like an NFL player getting busted or an NBA player or any kind of professional athlete getting busted, I gather sometimes people are like, "Ooh, I wonder who ratted on them," or "I wonder how they got caught." Do you know how you get caught? Your social security number. I mean, it's something as simple as that. You have to put into these sites if you register them under your own name. Like, I technically am an employee of an NBA franchise. If I were to go to FanDuel right now and bet on any NBA game, it would flag it immediately, and it would make the Grizzlies aware.
Yeah.
Like, immediately. So, like, if you think you're getting over on this stuff, like, you might, you know, I guess people get away with robbing banks sometimes too, but good luck, because there's been multiple examples over the past year of student athletes, different schools, different conferences getting in trouble over stuff like this. Legal trouble, not just school trouble. And perhaps we've got the latest example at Temple.
I have a statement. Temple dropped it literally in the process of us just boilerplate, but I definitely want to include it. It said, "We are aware of the social media posts regarding last night's men's basketball game. We will review the reports thoroughly in accordance with university and NCAA policies. While we can't comment any further at this time, we take this matter very seriously," end quote. That is the official statement from Temple there. And yeah, like, you know, not only is this an interesting story, like, it is a legitimate story, and, you know, you can't obviously just this is the number one now with the proliferation of gambling. I mean, this kind of thing is constantly on the watch for list, and it almost feels inevitable across sports because of how prolific all this stuff has become. But the integrity of the games are of the utmost. If you don't have that, you don't have anything, obviously. And as this story, you know, advances, we'll keep you updated. But that was a curveball we saw there on Thursday, GP.
Are we ready for the final four and one?
I know I'm ready. I mean, are you?
I don't know if I'm ready. I honestly don't really know if I'm ready. Well, I guess we'll find out. Let's hear one more word from our partners.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Let's go! It's the most all-star-studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
What's up, Anderson Cooper?
There you go.
That's my guy. Final 4-1. It's presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. FanDuel Sportsbook, make every moment more. Right now, FanDuel got something special for our listeners. Be sure to go check out FanDuel's Profit Boost tokens in the app right now. You can use it for FanDuel's same game parlay for the Duke North Carolina game on Saturday. Profit Boost tokens are going to be available before the big game. You can view your account page now to learn more about your boost. That's your account page at FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Updated records. God. Updated records. Damn it. Updated records. 45-39-3. That's me after an 0-5 week last week. 0-5.
That's a squirrel.
0-5. Deadleg, you're 46-38-3. After a 5-0 week last week. I'm mounted. I'm surmounted.
That's a shame.
I feel like Temple. I feel like Temple.
You better not.
I feel like Temple. Game one.
Let's go.
Saturday, noon Eastern. Memphis at FAU inside Carrot Top Arena.
Why?
Why?
I guess he went. Did he went there? Did he go there and I've forgotten this?
Carrot Top is a FAU owl. Okay. People think he's a Carrot Top, but he's not. He's an owl. Okay. Carrot Top's an owl.
Where can the people watch this game?
CBS, America's most watched network, network of stars. KenPom's got it. Florida Atlantic -7. And I'd like to apologize on behalf of my alma mater to my bosses. It's possible. I told them, man, that Memphis FAU game to end the regular season, that sure could be, that like might decide, that could be a game between two top 20 teams deciding a conference championship. It's not that. It's a team against, it's a Florida Atlantic team that's going to make the NCAA tournament, but do it as an unranked team.
Yeah.
And it's a Memphis team that is still technically alive / on the bubble, but buddy, they got a ways to go.
It's not on the bubble, but it would be on the bubble if it won this game and swept FAU. And then it still has a chance. It's not on the bubble right now. Memphis right now.
If.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is on the bubble right now.
No. Memphis is.
Well, right. How big's your bubble? Let's talk about the size of your bubble. Let's talk about the size of your bubble. What kind of bubble you rocking with?
It's funny you mention that.
What kind of bubble you slinging?
Okay. I would say the bubble is you got your first four in, your last four out, or first four out, last four in, whatever. And then after that, it's malleable, but I would say after the first four out, it's the bubble is like the next 4 to 6 teams outside that picture, I would say. And Memphis isn't in the 4 to 6 teams outside the field right now. And then
some bracketologists would disagree with you. I just have you know.
That's totally fine. Does Jerry Palm have Memphis on the bubble right now?
Well, Jerry Palm only does first four out.
No, he's got a bubble designation on CBSSports.com.
Well, let's look at it then.
Oh, you bring it up. I'll give you Memphis's numbers right now. 2-2 in quad one.
You don't have to give me Memphis's number. I got to memorize.
Trust me, I know. 6-6 in quad 1-2. It has a win and a loss in every single box. 11-1 in quad 3, 5-1 in quad 4. 71st in the net. Its best metric right now is 44 in KPI. It is not a bubble team. It would be one with a sweep of FAU. It needs to, basically, Memphis needs to win against FAU, make the American Championship game, and then we can have a conversation about whether or not it would get into the tournament. But it is not there just yet.
To answer your question,
yes.
Jerry Palm does not have Memphis on his bubble list.
There we go.
But
oh, what?
But this doesn't make what I said earlier untrue. There are some bracketologists who would disagree with you. Maybe not the great Jerry Palm, but some other ones.
Fair enough.
I do agree with this. Let me be clear. Yeah. They have to win this weekend to even have a chance. If you lose, that dream is over completely.
I mean, right now, Memphis probably has at large. Actually, you know what? Torvik, you can do this. You can sort this data on Torvik right now. I'm going to tell you right now what Torvik has for Memphis's at-large case. Memphis right now, at-large chance, he has Torvik has 0% chance Memphis gets at large. So there's another one. Definitely not on the bubble at Torvik. Oh god, he's going double bird right now.
0%, zero.
Just went double bird on you there. That's called a double bird right there.
Zero? It's got to be more than zero.
Torvik has 0% chance for Memphis to get an estimate at large.
Zero. Wait till I tell Memphians in about an hour.
Exactly.
They're going to hate to hear this.
He's got him at zero, and he's got 8.8% chance to get in. So 8.8% chance to win the American tournament right now. I'm going to take on this line, though. You said Owls minus seven.
Yes.
GP. I'll take Memphis to be inside that line. I'll go Memphis covers. FAU wins. FAU got a win on the road at North Texas on Wednesday night, which I thought was actually fairly critical. Some others might disagree. I think FAU is actually a lock. I think it's worst case scenario. You lose at home to Memphis. You lose your first American game. I think you're in Dayton if that happens. I think you've just got too much at this point. Even with that just atrocious quad four Bryant home loss weighing you down there, I think FAU's dancing no matter what. I think FAU wins this game. I'll take Memphis to cover.
You don't know what FAU's arena's name. Trivia time. What's the arena name?
Dude, it better well be named after freaking Dusty May at this point, or Vlad Golden, the guy on the team. Like, but I have no idea.
What if they named it after Vlad Golden? Wouldn't it be awesome?
Do it. Yeah, I'm seriously, do it right now.
It's Eleanor R. Baldwin Arena. So you might be wondering, who is Eleanor R. Baldwin? Because that's what I was wondering.
Of course you were.
She's a social studies teacher in the area.
What's her Wikipedia picture look like? 37 years old? What do we got going on here?
No, she's like, you know, she's an older fella. But like, she seems to be doing all right.
She's an older fella?
I mean, she's an older gal.
Okay, there we go.
She's an older gal.
They've named it after a social studies teacher.
Yeah, and I'm trying to... I can't tell you how much time I spent last night, because I did wake up in the middle of the night. I did one of the things where I fell asleep immediately, and then I wake up in the middle of the night. So now my whole Friday's...
Should I text me right now and ask why the arena's named after a social studies teacher?
I'm sorry?
Should I text Dusty May right now and ask why his arena is named after a social studies teacher?
I'm about to tell you why. Yeah. What I'm trying to figure out when I woke up in the middle of the night is how did this social studies teacher get all this money to just give to a FAU? And it's unclear. I can't figure it out. I can't figure it out.
I'm betting on Temple games.
She was betting on Temple games, built her war chest, and then gave FAU $7.5 million. She's a Northwestern grad. She just lives in the area, and she's like just became a FAU fan. She gave them $7.5 million, and they said, "Cool, now we play inside Eleanor R. Baldwin." The Owls are inside Eleanor R. Baldwin tomorrow. All right. For sure. You know what they call it?
The herb.
The Ellie.
No, the Ellie. Yeah,
the Ellie. It's like, oh, hey, you going to the Ellie tomorrow? The Tigers are in town.
Our editor, the great Marcus Nelson, he might be going to this game, by the way. He lives locally there, so keep an eye on that. By the way, did you like social studies in high school? I was big on social studies. I enjoyed it.
I didn't like anything in high school.
Okay.
I didn't even start trying to learn anything until I was in college.
All right.
I didn't start, you know, you're supposed to start learning like in preschool. I didn't really start until college. I didn't really know anything until college. And most of what I know now, I didn't learn until after college.
All right.
I wasn't that focused when I was younger.
Gary Patterson, an inspiration to an entire generation.
I've taken Memphis too. How could I not? Tigers plus the seven. Game two, Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Number 15, Kentucky at number 4, Tennessee, inside Dame Bradshaw Arena.
What a game.
You can watch it on CBS, America's most watched network, the network of stars. KenPom has it. Tennessee minus nine, big number.
It's a big number. I'll be in HQ studio on Saturday. So if you watch this on Paramount Plus, how this usually goes is the game ends, toss it back to the studio. I'll give you a quick bite of analysis. And then I would think this is the Bird and Raft game. I would think Ian Eagle, Bill Rafter, we're on this game. Do a little interview with Raft and then keep up the studio coverage. So, yeah, have that going for second screen. Your boy's going to be in studio all evening long. Tennessee won this game the first time around. 103-92 back in early February. In that game, Sakai Ziegler had 26 points, 13 assists. Josiah Jordan James, a career-high 26 points. And Rob Dillingham, that was the game when he went off for 35. This one's Tennessee minus nine at home. You know, Kentucky, it won at Vandy at home. on what was senior night, Antonio Reeves and probably half the roster, frankly. Dillingham had 23 in that game. Reeves had 20. How about this nugget for you, GP? Antonio Reeves right now has six straight games with 20 or more points. It's a long trivia time. The last time a Kentucky player went six or more games with 20 scored.
Drew Timmy.
If only.
No.
It's not Adam Morrison either.
No, you know who it is?
I know who it is. I'm asking the question.
Yeah, I know who it is too. Jamal Murray.
It is Jamal Murray. And how about this? Jamal Murray, 2015-16. Dude, I cannot believe it's been eight freaking seasons since Jamal Murray was in college. Where does the time go? He averaged 20.0 points exactly. That's the most ever for a UK player under Cal right now. Antonio Reeves sitting at 20.0 points per game. So he might actually become the best scorer from a points per game average that Cal ever has. I'm interested to see how well he plays here in this game. Kentucky's offense is, hit on it plenty. Right? It's been tremendous this year. Third in points per game, top three in offensive efficiency. Tennessee looking to clinch an outright SEC regular season championship with a win here for the first time. And it's done it for the first time since 07-08. It's only their second time. This is unbelievable. Credit to our CBS Sports Research folks for this. Tennessee only has two outright SEC. Now, because this is because Kentucky's dominated this conference forever, but only two outright SEC championships in the past 50 years. Bruce Pearl got one in 07-08, and then there's this year. But prior to that, it was 1966-67. Then you got it back to the 40s, man. Incredible. Tennessee's won seven in a row since February 10th. And in that stretch, beating opponents by an average of 18 points. I give you enough info, you want more. I got more. They're playing their four final games of the regular season against AP opponents. It's only the second time that's ever happened. They did it in January 2004. Here are those results. They beat Auburn. They won at Alabama. They won at South Carolina. Now they're home against Kentucky. Can they win four games in a row against ranked competition? I'm going to say yes, but the number's too big. So for the second straight game here, I'm going to go with a road dog to cover. Give me Kentucky. I think this game is going to be outstanding. I will say Tennessee wins, Kentucky covers.
Yeah, I don't think the number will actually be Tennessee minus nine, do you?
I don't. Mark me down for... Good question. Mark me down for seven. And I still think I would take Kentucky inside that number.
Yeah, it'll be closer to 7.5, something like that. But I'm just going to try to take the value in the number that we're using. I think Tennessee wins the game, but I hope it's competitive. I'd like to have a nice, competitive, high-level college basketball game on America's Most Watched Network. So I'll take Kentucky plus the points as well. Game three, Saturday, 6:30 Eastern, number 7, North Carolina, at number 9, Duke, inside R.J. Barrett Indoor Stadium. You can watch it on ESPN. Kim Pop's got a Duke minus 4.
This is a reminder to Dan Shulman, who listens to this podcast. He owes us a podcast reference on ESPN.
I love that you can't say somebody without mentioning that they listen to the podcast.
If they're a genuine fan of the pod, why would I not let the people know?
I think we all know at this point. I think we got it.
I think that Dan Shulman needs to bring up that it is. How far by the crow as the crow flies? Is it 8 or 9 miles? Here we are again. I should have looked this up before the show. What is it as the crow flies? I think it's 9 miles, right?
I never understand them giving me this information in crow miles like I'm a crow. Do I look like a crow? Do I look like a crow?
We literally had this discussion like 3.5 weeks ago.
I do kind of look like a crow. That's the problem with me putting my foot down and screaming, do I look like a crow? Is that somebody will be like...
9 miles.
You kind of look like a crow. 9 miles as the crow
flies. 10.9 road distance miles. 9 miles as the crow flies. When Shulman does this, someone grab it so we can play it on the pod.
I can't understand why they're giving me crow miles. Like, does that make any sense? Like, if somebody said...
As the bird flies, what do you want from me?
Dead leg, where are we meeting for lunch? We're meeting at this place, just down the road from this...
You did this bit 3 weeks ago. I know, I got it.
Down the road from this other place. Tell me how long it gets there in crow time. What? Crow time? I don't need to know anything about crow. I'm not a crow. Do I look like a crow?
Couple of top eight teams here. Duke 24-6. It's only loss. I mean, the court storm at Wake Forest apparently has completely sent two programs in entirely different directions.
Guy, Cal Filipowski back from the dead.
He is. Is he ever? And Duke won, obviously, earlier this week at NC State. This will be for a share of the ACC regular season championship. Carolina is going to try and win it outright. From a game analysis standpoint, final game here for Jeremy Roach at home. I guess he has the COVID year technically, but I would think I'm figuring this is the final home game for Roach, Filipowski, Tyrese Proctor, Jared McCain. And yeah, it'll be a pretty intense scene there. Armando Bacot, his final trip to UNC. He's already gotten an all-time victory there 2 years ago. Obviously, UNC has won five in a row. Defenses look pretty good over this stretch over the past few games here. Kempom, you said, has the line.
Duke minus four.
I will go Carolina straight up. Carolina straight up walks in there again. Armando Bacot leaves with a Hansbrough-esque legacy. And why do I say that, GP?
I don't know.
I believe Hansbrough never lost at Cameron. I believe he won every single time when he played at Cameron. Someone in the chat, fact check me in real time. I think Hansbrough never lost at Cameron.
Well, good for him.
So I'm taking Carolina.
Good for him. Duke has been interesting in the sense that they've never really cracked the conversation of the top tier of the sport this season. Like, as we're talking about Purdue and Houston and UConn, and then every once in a while it'll be like, and keep an eye, you see what Tennessee's doing. Or, hey, and Arizona added another quadrant one win, and North Carolina could be the fourth number one. There's like the Houston, Purdue, UConn level, and then there's the Tennessee, Arizona, Carolina, Iowa State, Marquette's been in there level. And Duke's just sort of been right outside of that the entire year, it feels like.
Yeah.
But never bad enough to where we had to go, let's start with this. How concerned are you about Duke? We've never really had to go there either.
This podcast doesn't embrace the, hey, how concerned are you about this team? Again, we've gone over this before. But I hear what you're saying, and I have been confirmed in the chat. Hansbrough never lost to Cameron. I will say this. I think, and Jerry Palm and I disagree, if Duke wins this game and wins the ACC tournament, I think it has an outside shot at the last one seed. It will need help. It will need Tennessee, Arizona, UNC. It will need those teams to lose early in their conference tournaments. But I think Duke is your longest shot to be a one seed that's still actually in the conversation. It needs to win out. But I don't put it outside the realm of possibility.
I think Duke is in the conversation, but here's the problem for Duke now. And this might end up being the problem for everybody trying to get that fourth and one seed. I don't think Arizona's going to lose again.
Probably not. Yeah. Duke, average net win is worse than all the other teams fighting for a one. You look at what Duke's done and it's strength of schedule relative, on balance it's played a weaker schedule. So it's awesome.
Yeah. So like, if I don't think Arizona is going to lose again, then I don't think Duke can pass Arizona.
Correct. That won't happen. Yeah.
Right.
You need Arizona to get picked off like this weekend and lose another pack.
And you probably need Tennessee to get picked off too.
You need Tennessee to lose twice. I'm not saying I think it's going to happen. I put it at, 5% chance, but yeah, I think it's still within the realm of possibility. Particularly, they got to run out, but win big here against Carolina.
Hey, okay. We'll put it at more than zero.
There we go.
Torvik said zero
for Memphis.
That's disrespectful. Zero.
That's what it is. I took Carolina. I assume you.
Duke. I'm taking Duke minus four. Yeah. We're gonna have co-ACC champs. All and right. If somebody tweets me and tries to say, "Well, GP, regular season championships aren't really a thing," shut up. I hate that. We're gonna have co-ACC regular season champs Saturday. Oh no. We're on game four Sunday, 4:30 Eastern. It's Michigan State at Indiana inside Kelvin Sampson Hall. You can watch it on CBS. It's America's most watched network. Right, it's the network of stars.
Wow.
Kempom's got it. Michigan State minus four on the road against a blue blood. What?
At least you didn't name this thing after Liam McNeely. I honestly thought that's what you were going to do.
Buddy, that is rough. Less than 24 hours after they say, hey, coach is coming back, your five-star recruit's like, I'm out. That's a rough development.
Well, I can spin it. But yeah, before we pick the game, let's talk Indiana real quick here. Because Zach Osterman from the Indy Star broke the story that Mike Woodson, the decision has apparently been made that he will return for another season. This obviously is a very controversial decision in that state. Internet was humming on Wednesday when that news broke there. But I wonder, and so then on Thursday, McNeely, who is, you know, top 15 level prospect, 5-star guy, announces he is decommitting from Indiana. I wonder if part of this might be because Malik Renew, Mackenzie and Bako, maybe they're coming back. And 3 months ago, McNeely thought he might be sliding in to, say, Mbako's spot. And so that's not going to happen. And maybe IU returned some key players. And because of that, that's why
you're a top 15 recruit
for Indiana fans.
All right. You're ready? Okay, fine. Here's my counter. If you're a top 15 recruit worried about anybody on Indiana's roster, you ain't wired right.
Okay. Well, maybe he's not wired right. Kansas was the second place team last time out, so we will see if he indeed winds up going to KU. Weird times in Indiana, and yeah, I'm fascinated by this decision. Maybe it winds up being the right decision, but Mike Woodson is not the long-term head coach of Indiana. Like, he could coach there for one more year. He could coach there for five more years, but I think a lot of Indiana fans are understandably pulling at their hair because they don't want to look up in 3 years and see, like, you know, Dusty May at Ohio State getting them to the Elite Eight and being third in the Big Ten while Indiana is still spinning its tires like that. You know, the fan base is so over not being involved as a consistently nationally relevant team. And the decision to bring Woodson back, he got him to the tournament in the first 2 years. Like, he did get them there. They're not going there this year unless they win the Big Ten tournament. I get the frustration from IU fans. And so now it really is. It's a punch to the chin with the Woodson news for those who wanted them to try and take a big swing at a hire. And then it's a punch to the gut that you see McNeely's not going to wind up going there. So,
well, hey, far be it for me to ever question what Indiana's doing with their basketball coach.
You've never done that.
Mm-mm. And I don't particularly care. Like, you know, I sort of had this revelation recently where I'm like, you know what? Maybe I don't need to care about things that really don't impact my life in any way whatsoever. Why do I care? How does it matter to me who Indiana's coach is? So why don't I just say I don't care who they keep him or they can move on from him. Doesn't matter to me.
Right? Well, I mean, you're paid to write about and talk about the sports, so maybe just a little bit of investment might not.
No, I mean, but when I say things like why do I care? Like, if Indiana wants to keep their coach, they can keep their coach. Okay. All right. It doesn't matter to me. The only thing that I think is, and let me be clear, I don't even think it's crazy to keep him in a vacuum. I don't think it's crazy to keep him. I mean, to not keep him would be moving him after 3 years that resulted in two NCAA tournament appearances. I know this year has been bad, but the guy did make the NCAA tournament in two of the past 3 years. You know, on the other hand, year one, they started 30th at KenPom, finished 48th. Year two, they started 12th at KenPom, finished 30th. Year three, this year, started 50th at KenPom, currently 91st. Has quite literally underachieved relative to that computer all 3 years. So there's that. The only thing that would further complicate this for me if I were Indiana is the Dusty May thing. Because I think we all know, like, Mike Woodson's next bad year will be his last. And it doesn't matter if it's 2 years from now. This is exactly the Tom Crean thing all over again, except shorter and with way less success. Once the Indiana fans decided they were done with Tom Crean, you know what he did? Like, they were ready to be done with Tom Crean. You know what he did? He won an outright Big Ten title. And so they were like, well, I guess we can't move him now. And then you know what happened? He comes back. I think OG Anunoby got hurt. They have an injury and then in bad season, and they got him. Boom. And that's the way this will go. So his next bad season will be the last one. So good luck trying to survive that. Most guys don't. I would just, as an Indiana fan or as an Indiana administrator, I would just be thinking through my worst nightmare. And my worst nightmare is we held on to a coach that our fans were already out on for an extra year. The guy who could have been our next great thing went to, let's just play this out, worst case scenario, a conference rival, Ohio State. And now he's built Ohio State into a top 10 program, and we are firing Mike Woodson a year from now. That's the thing I would be like,
yep.
Did we, not only did we keep our coach too long, did we miss our opportunity to grab what some people seem to think might be Brad Stevens 2.0?
Well, that was what a source in the industry told me earlier this week, and I included that in the court report. And to be clear, like, let's not – the quote was, Indiana fans are worried they're missing out on Brad Stevens part two or whatever. Let's – we need to pump the brakes. Dusty May is a good coach, but we need to pump the – I understand that, and partly it's like, you know, Brad Stevens grew up in Indiana. He never became the Indiana coach. There was scuttlebutt. The last time around we did this with Woodson, where Indiana fans got, you know, frustrated and upset – one of them, I think, was even Titus when I said Brad Stevens is not, like, this is not going to happen. And so we go through this all over again. The point is, Dusty May is from the state, identified as a very talented young coach and could have a very bright future ahead of him. And they're worried about all of that. So I get
Yes, to be clear, the Brad Stevens comps are premature and perhaps wildly inaccurate. But like that. I didn't remember. I apologize. I didn't remember I read that in the court report. I just knew that I'd seen it somewhere.
You're good.
And like the fact that some people believe that makes it something that has to be taken into account. And even if Dusty hasn't been to back-to-back title games, he did take a bad job in a bad league, win that league tournament, go to a Final Four. And even if this year hasn't lived up to expectations, he's still safely about to take FAU to the NCAA tournament for the second straight year. And they'll be in the tournament for the second straight year for the first time in school history.
Yeah.
So it ain't back-to-back title games, but it's still incredibly impressive stuff. And I don't want to speak for Dusty, and as always, we'll see. But I'd be surprised if he didn't take a job after this season. I'd be surprised if he doesn't take a job somewhere. And if you're Indiana and you look up in a year and the Mike Woodson thing is just sputtering out and Dusty's already building possibly a conference rival into a power, you'll feel real sick about making this decision.
That being said, I will take Indiana in the game. I will. They've won three in a row, and the past two came on the road. They won at Maryland, and they got a win at Minnesota, and it was a definitive one there. So I will take – you know, Michigan State has been – it's been a little – little up, little down. Got a good win at home against Northwestern on senior night, and in doing so, went to 18-12. I think MSU's numbers are good enough. I think MSU is in. If it were to lose at Indiana and drop its first Big Ten game, we'd have a hell of a debate there. Because I've been more resistant to MSU's NCAA tournament profile, I think, than your average bear. But I think they're going to get in, but I think they lose the game. I'll take Indiana to get this done on its home floor, and the Mike Woodson revival tour rolls on.
Oh, you're falling for a trap. You just fell right into a trap.
Did I?
Yeah. You're taking Indiana plus the four?
Yes.
That's a trap. Okay. You've fallen into a trap. Here's how I know. Because there's no way you would ever...
Oh, God.
Make a blue blood program a 4-point underdog at home to an unranked opponent. Like, that's crazy, right? This is a blue blood program we're talking about. All right. Blue blood program.
All right. I got it.
And the idea that they'd be a 4-point underdog at home to an unranked team that people have spent months wondering if they're even going to make the NCAA tournament. That's a trick. It's a trap. They're begging everybody to take the blue blood underdog at home. Not me. I ain't falling for it. Give me Michigan State -4.
We got some good disagreement here. Makes it interesting. Let's tour around the weekend before our and one pick. Friday, you got conference tournaments galore. Missouri Valley, Big South, WCC. Did you see? You might have been traveling. Pepperdine up on Pacific. Was it 39-2 at some point? Nada, do you have a screen grab? He might have the score. I think... The final, here's the first time this has ever been uttered in the history of this sport. The 102-43 final, this game was not as close as the score would indicate. It was, both these teams are going to move on from their head coaches, interim situation. I think it started 26-0 Pepperdine. You hate to see it. Pepperdine advances in the WCC tournament, and it will play here. I'll give you right now. Pepperdine playing San Diego, 9 o'clock on Friday. So conference tournaments galore. I've been loving them. So on Friday, you've got MVC, Big South, WCC, SoCon, Summit, and CAA. Best game on the board is Boise State at San Diego State, 10 Eastern, FS1. Those are a couple teams that are going to the tournament, but that's a good Friday night tip. Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern, CBS, Texas A&M at the Mississippi Running Rebels. Keep an eye out for that. Also at 2, Oklahoma, Texas. Both teams should get into the tournament. I would actually stop short of calling either of these teams a lock. The winner will be. Loser, just, you know, don't lose this one by blowout fashion, then get absolutely run in the Big 12 tournament by one of the lower level teams, and then you should be fine. 2:30 Eastern, South Carolina, Mississippi State. Mississippi State is a bubble team, so that's a game with some urgency there. Creighton, Villanova, 2:30 Eastern on Fox. Nova at home. Yes or no broadly without consulting all the context necessary. Nova wins the game at home against Creighton. Is it a lock? Does it need to win a game in the Big East tournament, Parrish?
I would not feel comfortable calling Villanova a lock right now.
Neither would I. Let's see what Torvik says for Villanova's chances to get in.
If it's more than if it ain't also zero was disrespectful, Deadleg. Zero's disrespectful.
You say that. I dropped the ball on that because I got the exact one for.
Stop disrespecting me, bro.
Like I had that loaded on the board. That is literally Bart Torvik. What's Memphis's chances of getting in as at large? 0%.
Stop disrespecting me,
bro. That's exactly what happened there. Villanova, according to Torvik, 66.5% to get in as an at large team. 66.5. Ooh, and that's playing the Creighton game.
That's not a lock, though.
Not a lock. No. Definitely, it's definitely not a lock, but that's a good one, 2:30 Eastern. Then Marquette, Xavier, 5 Eastern. That's notable because Marquette on the road here, 2 seed, fighting for it. It's worth a drive by. Clemson plays at Wake Forest. Clemson is a lock. Wake Forest must win the game. You have no case for an at-large bid. It is zero. It is 0% for Wake Forest if it does not win this game at home. It will need to win the ACC tournament. Wake Forest, don't mess around. 6 Eastern ACC Network. Baylor, Texas Tech, also a 6 Eastern tip. Just a good old-fashioned Big 12 battle right there. Worth tuning into. ESPN2. Parrish won't watch this game, but Utah plays Oregon, 7 Eastern, Pac-12 Network. Utah needs to win the game to maintain an at-large case. Oregon's pretty much done. But if it won this game and made like the Pac-12 title game, maybe we can talk. Your only auto bid of Saturday, OVC title game.
Love the OVC title game.
8 Eastern, ESPN2. I can't give you the matchup yet because we haven't determined who's playing in it on Friday.
Murray State, Belmont.
Okay, neither of those teams are in the conference.
I know, but that's the way I want it to be.
Murray State and Belmont don't play in the OVC anymore.
I know, but that's who should play in the OVC title game.
They've played some epics over the years, but... yeah, both those teams are now in the Missouri Valley.
Well, that's a shame.
If you want to see them play, let's see. Well, Murray State's already out. It got absolutely steamrolled. And then Belmont plays Northern Iowa, 3:30 Eastern Friday in the Missouri Valley Tournament against Northern Iowa. So keep an eye out for that. Your OVC championship will involve either Morehead State, Tennessee Martin, playing against Little Rock or Western Illinois. So keep an eye on that. That's your first team in the tournament, Saturday night. ESPN2, 8 Eastern, lock in. 8 Eastern on Fox. What do we have? What do we have?
Squirrels. Squirrel. Squirrels. Squirrel person. Squirrels. But a squirrel. I think that's a squirrel.
I think that's a UConn-Providence game. 8 Eastern on Fox there. Providence needs to have it at home. Just a humongous, humongous game for the Friars. Can't wait to evaluate what the Big East is once we get out of this weekend. And then UNLV Nevada, 10:30 Eastern, CBS Sports Network. That's a good one. UNLV wins at Nevada. Whoo! Maybe. Nevada, though, safely in the field, and I think it'll be okay. Sunday, auto bids. 3 more, baby. Big South, noon Eastern, ESPN2. Then you've got Wisconsin-Purdue at 12:30. That's going to be Zach Edey's final home game. So be a pretty powerful scene there at Mackey Arena. Wisconsin beat Rutgers on Thursday, so thankfully... did some positive impact on his T-ball score. Then 2 Eastern, as we do every year. Come on now. CBS, America's Most Watched Network.
Network of stars.
This would be the final 4-1 game if we knew the matchups. We don't. The Valley gets going. Quarterfinals really get rolling today. But 2 Eastern, CBS, Missouri Valley Championship game. For the betterment of the conference, I hope this is Drake against Indiana State. Because if it is... We'll have an intriguing debate early about if the loser of that has any chance as an at-large or if it is a stop disrespecting me, bro situation there. The A-Sun will also be giving out its auto bid. So if you're keeping track at home, OVC Saturday, bid one. Big South, noon, Sunday, bid two. Valley, bid three on CBS. And then the fourth will come out of the A-Sun after Stetson, as the two seed, is playing in its first ever A-Sun championship because Steven Swenson hit a three with 4.3 seconds to go that capped an incredible comeback against 10-seeded Jacksonville. He had 29 points, made 7 threes in this game. Parrish, I know you didn't see it. This game was outrageous. The A-Sun tournament has been unreal. It has been Mountain West level entertaining. So that's on Sunday. And then tell you what, we have Illinois, Iowa, 7 Eastern on Sunday. That actually, Iowa is near the cut line. So that is a significant game late into the night on Sunday. Those are your other ones to watch. Now it's time for the N1. It is on Saturday. It's going to go down. Oh, man, I had the guy's name and I forgot it. I don't have the court name. It's New Mexico at Utah State.
Carrot Top.
No, it's not Carrot Top. You know, it's Stu Morrill. Legendary coach there. Stu Morrill Court, okay? New Mexico at Utah State on Stu Morrill Court. You're going to watch this game at 8:30 Eastern on CBS Sports Network Saturday. Utah State safely in the field. I've got it as a 6 seed. New Mexico's on the 11 line right now. Very urgent game. New Mexico has 5 road wins GP this season. Utah State only has 1 home loss. This is at the Spectrum, Stu Morrill Court. New Mexico actually rates better at KenPom. Line? KenPom says Utah State -3. Who you got?
Oh, that's too little. Too little for the Aggies.
Well, that's what it is.
That's a little number for Danny Sprinkle. Yeah, I'm taking Utah State. What are you even talking about?
Okay. Talking about the N1. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm also going to take Utah State. We agree on this.
Yeah. What are we even doing?
We both got the Aggies, and as mentioned earlier, if they win, and other things, if they win, I think if Utah State wins, it's its first outright conference championship in 13 years. So there we go.
All right. Hey, is that going to do it?
I think that's going to do it. Yeah.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle Legend. Shouts to Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening and watching the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple, Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. Make sure you're doing that. We'll talk to you again on Sunday. Till then, take care.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.